Welcome to If You Love This Planet. I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott, and in this program we talk about the greatest medical and environmental threats to all life, such as nuclear weapons and nuclear power, global warming, ozone depletion, toxic pollution, deforestation, and many other social and political issues that relate to global well-being. So if you love this planet, keep listening. Hello and welcome to If You Love This Planet. My guest today is Bruce Gagnon, coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. In 2006, he was the recipient of the Dr. Benjamin Spock Peacemaker Award, and in 2010, Bruce was extensively featured in the award-winning documentary called Pax Americana and the Weaponization of Space. Bruce has worked on space issues for 27 years. His book called Come Together Right Now, Organizing Stories from a Fading Empire, was republished in 2008. Bruce Gagnon's articles have appeared in many publications, and he writes a popular blog called Organizing Notes. Bruce Gagnon initiated the main campaign to bring our war dollars home in 2009 that spread to other New England states and beyond. This campaign made the important connections between endless war spending and fiscal crisis throughout the US. Bruce Gagnon has been on the program before, and he joins us again now at a propitious time in the nation's history. Welcome to If You Love This Planet, Bruce.
Thank you very much, Helen.
So, Bruce, important connections between endless war spending and the fiscal crisis. By God, have you got a fiscal crisis now? Do you want to sort of extrapolate upon that and then go into the war spending?
Well, you know, when you move millions and millions and millions of jobs out of this country into other countries where obviously cheap labor is what the corporations are looking for, and then you have an economic downturn, and you have this massive, massive giveaway of public funds to the banks and the Wall Street hedge fund operators and other such people, that you're bound to create a deficit, a budget deficit. You're bound to create a fiscal crisis. And the solution then, as they have done in just the past week, is to say, We need to cut even more. We need to now hack away at Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and a whole host of other bastions of social progress will now be under attack in even a stronger way than they have been in recent years. So, and what do we recover to? How can we recover when we don't really have jobs in this country anymore? We don't make shoes, we don't make clothes, we don't make cars to speak of. We don't make refrigerators, TVs, VCRs. Even in Maine, where I live, the paper mills are closing down. They're cutting timber and taking it out of the country to be processed, that they used to do here in the lumber mills around the state. So even those jobs are disappearing now. So it's all about corporate profit. And until we do two things, until we begin to tax the rich people and the corporations. A lot of these oil corporations made massive, massive profits in recent years and didn't even pay any taxes at all. And so until we tax corporations and the wealthy, and then also bring our war dollars home, we're spending $10 billion, that's with a B, every single month in Afghanistan. And despite what President Obama says, we still have more than 50,000 troops in Iraq. And in fact, the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff has just in recent days been saying to Iraq, well, now we want you to make a decision soon about inviting us to stay long-term, permanently in Iraq. So the pressure is being exerted on the Iraqi government to beg us to agree to allow us to stay forever in Iraq.
Well, why would Mullen want to stay? I thought America wanted to get out of Iraq. What's that story all about?
Well, that's the public relations spin, and to create the illusion that we do want to get out. Of course we want to stay.
Why do you want to stay?
Well, I think two reasons. One is to control the distribution of oil. And then secondly, probably more importantly, is look at the map. Look at the location of Iraq, right next door to Iran. And Iran is number one on the target for being taken down as well. So we've now got Iran surrounded with our bases in Afghanistan, with our bases in Iraq and in other countries. So I think that it's all part of this global war to bring every country that is in what the Pentagon calls the non-integrating gap. Iran is in the non-integrating gap, which means they're not submitting to the authority of corporate globalization. And we are now surrounding those countries in the non-integrating gap, and the intention is to take them down one after the other.
Well, it takes my breath away, Bruce. Does America want to get into Iran because of the oil? It's got the third largest oil deposits in the world, right? Is that why?
I think so. I think that's a key to it. And also, they're a government that is resisting the authority of corporate globalization. That's
bloody hell! How dare America say that? How dare they? I mean, Iran is a very large country. What, there are 69 million people or more. It's an ancient country. They're not Arabs. They're Persians. They've got an incredibly rich history. If you go to Tehran, all the streets are named after poets. You know, it's an amazing country. What does America think it's doing? I mean, all I can say as a person who's not from America is, how dare they?
Well,
it just takes my breath away.
I agree with you. How dare they? But that question should be asked of many other things that we're doing in America today. How dare we build force the South Korean government to build a Navy base on Jeju Island in South Korea so that we can have move our new Aegis destroyers that are being made two a year here in Bath, Maine, where I live, that are being outfitted with missile defense systems that are going to be plunked down in the Yellow Sea just off the coast of China, so we can interrupt.
So this is taking on China. In other words, America's building military bases surrounding China, right? So is this part of that strategy? Is it taking over Jeju Island and putting your missile destroyers there?
Exactly. And you know, China imports 80% of their oil on ships. The U.S. has made the determination that while we might not be able to compete with China economically, if we control their access to oil, to resources, then we'll hold the key to their economic engine. And so the U.S. is developing a military strategy to carry out that plan.
Oh, God. Have they been writing these things, Bruce? Are there references to what you've just said?
They don't come quite out so blunt and say it, but when you put all the pieces of the puzzle together, they're quite clear. In the year 2000, there was an article in the Washington Post entitled "For the Pentagon, Asia Moving to the Forefront," and the article did go on to say that the U.S. was going to double its military presence in the Asian Pacific region, that China was a key competitor, and that they basically said in other language that we now need to move to manage China.
How dare America manage China? I mean, we need to be managing America. The world needs to be managing America. No, the world. I don't mean America itself, but I've read definitive Pentagon papers, Bruce, coming straight from the Pentagon, that they want to surround China with bases and lock them in. Now, there are two things I want to talk about. I want to talk about Jeju Island in a minute, but I have heard from a very reliable source that the reason that Libya is being taken on by the rebels, who are being armed by the United States to take on Colonel Gaddafi, is because China has a lot of investments in Libya, re the oil. Do you know about that?
I've heard that too. I think it makes all the sense in the world. There's a massive competition on the African continent between the United States and China for many different resources. A lot of the resources that are used to make computers and cell phones are on the African continent.
Rare earths, yes.
Yeah, the rare minerals. So, so whether it's oil or rare minerals or other resources, there's going to be massive conflict there. And that's why the U.S. has, just in the last couple of years, created AFRICOM, Africa Command.
Yes.
And so far, no African country has agreed to be the host country. AFRICOM is right now headquartered in Stuttgart, Germany. So the U.S. is pushing hard, though, to really concretize the whole Africa Command. Go to their website, just Google Africa Command or AFRICOM. Go there and see. There's videos. It's unbelievable what they're doing now. I saw a presentation on C-SPAN a few years ago where the commander of the National Guard at that time was making a presentation. He had a large map of the African continent, and he was saying the U.S. military is now establishing basing relationships with every single country on the African continent. They're creating what he called lily pad bases that will be key power projection outposts for quick intervention at any particular time, at any particular place. So I think the what we're seeing in Libya today is really the launching of an ongoing military strategy on the African continent.
So so it seems to me, Bruce, correct me if I'm wrong, that the Pentagon, as opposed to the White House, the State Department, or the Congress, is actually making foreign policy decisions about lily pads in Africa and AFRICOM and China and the like. Is that right? Do most of these policy decisions derive from the Pentagon?
I think it's a joint process now. It's from the Pentagon and it's from the corporate world.
Oh, the corporate world.
We've been seeing this now for, I think the last 20, 30, 40 years, this growing militarization of foreign policy and moving the power of foreign policy decision-making into the hands of the corporations who have these interests, whether they're the oil corporations or the weapons corporations or even the banking corporations and other corporations. But they're essentially creating foreign policy today. Congress is becoming more and more a show horse. And now this debt bill that Obama and the Democrats just helped, agreed to with the Republicans, creating this 12 or 13 member super committee that is going to essentially run the decision making process on the economy now, and give a up or down vote to the Congress, not allowing anyone to amend it, debate it in any real way. It's all part of really taking the power away from ultimately the American people and putting it into the hands of the corporate oligarchy.
I'm almost speechless. The other country that my very well-researched friend talked about was Syria. And the reason that things are happening in Syria and there's an uprising, an armed uprising. Note that in most of the Arab countries, the Arab Spring in Egypt and the like, they weren't armed uprisings, but they are in Libya and Syria. But Russia has a major base in Syria. Did you know about that, Bruce?
Yeah, I know a little bit about that, but I think the analysis is absolutely true that the U.S., I'm sure the CIA, is heavily involved in funding and arming the so-called resistance in Syria. It's very clear that Israel and the United States for a very long time have wanted to take down the Syrian government for very obvious reasons.
What are the obvious? I don't really know. What are the obvious reasons?
Well, I think number one is geography. Number two is their
What do you mean geography? Explain that.
Well, the proximity to Israel, and if Israel and the U.S. can put a client state into that country. It really expands Israel's land base. You could even potentially see the day, and this might seem like a far-fetched notion, but you could see the day that if they were U.S. and Israel were successful in putting a client state there, that a U.S. base or even an Israeli military base could move into there. And so it just changes the whole dynamic vis-a-vis Iran, Lebanon, the Palestinians, Hamas. I mean, it just changes everything. So I think it's part of, again, this grander plan of taking out any country, again, coming back to those words from the Pentagon, the non-integrating gap, taking out those countries that are not integrating, quote-unquote, properly.
Meaning they're not joining America.
The club, you know, the corporate club. Anybody that in any way resists joining the corporate global machine will be taken out. And that's the program. That's the program underway today, whether it's Gaddafi, whether it's Syria, whether it's Iran, or North Korea, or Venezuela. I mean, you know, they're all on the list.
But what gets me is, Bruce, that the American people don't know anything about this.
No,
I mean, you do because you study it. And I might point out that Bruce was actually once a Republican and he was in the U.S. Air Force. So this is a man who's not speaking out of the top of his head and has been, quotes, like a radical all his life. And he's not a radical. He's actually a conservative because he's for conserving life on the planet. But he comes from a so-called conservative base and he really knows what he's talking about. And what really disturbs me, Bruce, is the American people watch his rhubarb, can I say crap on the air?
Yeah, why not?
All the time on Fox and the celebrity rhubarb stuff, and they're being distracted by absolute rubbish and not being told the truth. Are they?
Even in
the New York Times.
It's increasingly difficult for the American people to know what's going on. But I will say this. One hopeful story to you.
Yeah.
I told you about this last time. I talked to you about a church in my town that is created every Tuesday night, this thing they call the Neighborhood Cafe. And we go most weeks and are part of it. And we usually pick up this one woman who's on welfare. She has some slight mental problems. She's not able to work. She receives Medicare. And so anyway, the other night we were eating, and she says to me, I have a local cable public access show, and she said, I saw your show the other night. She said, I want to challenge you. I want you on your next show to have one of these politicians on there. I see that they want to cut Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. And that if they cut that, she said, that's going to end me. What am I going to do? I'm going to have nothing. I'm going to be out on the street. And she has a 12-year-old daughter that we help her with. I was really impressed by the fact that she was paying attention on that level, because she's the classic example of a welfare person, totally disconnected from politics, watching trash TV all the time. But because it's affecting her life, she's really beginning to pay attention. So I think increasingly there are people paying attention. I think increasingly polls in this country are showing that Americans are overwhelmingly opposed to Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid being taken down. They want the rich to be taxed by a number of 70%, the American people want us out of Afghanistan, and they understand the connection between spending $10 billion a month in Afghanistan and the economic crisis at home. But the problem is there's a breakdown. There's a internal blockage, a political blockage between what the American people want and the Congress of the United States, which is now under the control of the corporate machine. So that's the problem increasingly, I think, that how do we get around this corporate blockage?
How do you have a revolution?
That's really it. And
without blood.
Yeah, you know, and so I think, you know, the people are coming around. They're coming around because it's really affecting them, and they're not buying it anymore. But where do we go? How do we build it? And this is one of the reasons why I think the Bring Our War Dollars Home campaign has been so successful across the country. It's really picking up steam lately, and I hope we'll get to talk about more about
that. Well, yeah, but it's not just war dollars abroad, Bruce. It's $1 trillion a year on weapons in the Pentagon and marching bands and portraits painted of the generals and God knows what. I mean, and then they say they're going to cut the Pentagon budget, and suddenly the Pentagon is beside itself with fury. And you know what, they'll come in and say, what about our national security and all of that? Absolute rubbish. And how much are we going to spend $180 billion on new nuclear weapons and huge new factories to build new nuclear weapons? But that's nothing compared to what the Pentagon spends on new planes, new ships. It's all toys for the boys, right? And the corporations.
Right. Yeah, but once you begin to, you know, you got to start somewhere with people, and you have to introduce the concept somewhere. And once you begin to get people to make that connection between the cost of these wars and this fiscal crisis, then you're able to go those next steps and have that very conversation that you just initiated, those very important points. But, you know, you've got to have a way to begin to bring that to people. You have to also have a way to begin to get local governments involved in this. See, my contention is that there are all kinds of city councils and mayors across the country that are really getting tired of laying off people. They're getting tired of shutting down social programs in their communities and seeing their communities turn into essentially neo-feudal societies.
Yeah.
And so we need a strategy to get those local elected officials that normally see Washington politics not in their, you know, that's not in my ballpark, I'm not supposed to talk about that, I don't really, I shouldn't have an opinion about that. We need to find a way to get them involved in that debate, talking about military spending and war spending. And so to bring our war dollars home, for me, is a tactical way to begin to get mayors and city council people. And so just a month ago, or a month and a half ago, the U.S. Conference of Mayors, for the first time since Vietnam, took a position on a foreign policy issue when they passed the Bring Our War Dollars Home resolution. So that was a big step. And so now these resolutions have passed in city councils in Los Angeles, Eugene, Oregon, Hartford, Connecticut, Amherst and Northampton, Massachusetts, Portland, Maine, Deer Isle, Maine, and the Solon School Board in Maine. The school board passed this resolution because they're closing down schools and laying off teachers in their small little community.
Oh, it's terrible, Bruce. My guest today is Bruce Gagnon, coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. Bruce, well, what do you say now about Obama? Is he just a corporate puppet?
Absolutely. And I've been saying that forever. I've been saying that when he was running for president.
Were you? How did you know then? I mean, I must have been terribly naive.
Well, as you said earlier, this is what I do. I do it all day long. I read things. I'm on the internet. I'm searching.
But so do I. So do I. But I didn't see through Obama. I thought there was some hope.
A friend of mine, retired Jewish man, former ran a textile mill in a nearby town. He's a brilliant man. And one night I was talking to him, he told me, when you go home, Google the Crown family of Chicago. So I did. Mm. And I discovered that they were the major stockholders in the General Dynamics Corporation, which General Dynamics owns Bath Iron Works here in Bath, Maine, where they build the Aegis Destroyer. And what I discovered was that the Crown family, it's a Jewish family, they introduced Obama to the national Jewish community and raised money for him from the very earliest days to get him going to create his campaign, making it a national campaign. And so from the earliest time, from the outset, Obama was indebted to the Crown family and to essentially General Dynamics. for his election as president of the United States.
Oh, my God.
And so it's no coincidence that just yesterday, our Republican senator, Susan Collins, went to Bath Iron Works to announce that the DDG 1000, this massively expensive $3 billion destroyer, a new generation, they've gone from $1 billion to $1.5 billion to now $3 billion a copy. This new destroyer outfitted with these missile defense systems, they've got funding for two more of them. So at a time when even the Pentagon is having to do a little cutting here and there and a little rearranging here and there, these destroyers are in the safe zone because, why? I'm convinced because Obama has promised General Dynamics that they will not see any slowdown. And as they build these destroyers, they now need more ports to put them. And this is one of the reasons why the Navy base on Jeju Island in South Korea is so important.
All right. Now, just describe Jeju Island. I've been reading a little about it, how absolutely untouched and beautiful it is, Bruce. Tell us about it.
It's a pristine island, a beautiful island that UNESCO has recognized for many different environmental qualities. But one of the most important things is just off the coast, within a stone's throw of the rocky coastline, on the southern end of Jeju Island, in this little town of Gangjeon. Just off the coast are these world-class, world heritage soft coral reefs that will be destroyed when they have to dredge the bottom of the ocean floor in order to make it possible for U.S. aircraft carriers and Aegis destroyers to be able to come into the port that they're building. The rocky coastline, which is teeming with endangered red crabs and other plant life and all kinds of aquatic life, as you can imagine, is going to be covered in cement in order to build the piers or the wharfs to dock these ships. The tangerine and rice farmers who've been there in the village for more than 300 years are having their lands taken from them right now as we speak. And many of them have been arrested and put in jail. One of the villagers, hunger striked for 75 days. He almost died in opposition to this place. One of our board members, a woman, an artist by the name of Sung Hee Che from Incheon on the mainland, moved there a year ago to bring the Global Network's support to this village. And she has been organizing an international, jointly with our membership around the world, international support for the villagers, because we see this not only as an environmental issue, as a human issue, but also as a key missile defense Star Wars base issue. And so for us, it really links all these things together. And so she's now in jail. She's been in jail since May for holding a banner that read, "Not one stone, not one flower." And she's been in jail now for several months, and God knows when she's ever going to get out.
And the South Koreans have jailed her.
Yes. When we've called the South Korean embassy in Washington and in support of her and the other villagers, we've been told several times, not just me, but other people that have called me and reported this, they were told, and I heard this myself, don't call us, call your government.
Yeah.
They're twisting our arm, telling us, making us build this
Well,
base.
So have you called your government?
Well, of course we have,
and
they deny any involvement. The South Koreans
are
building
really?
This base.
Oh, do they? We How dare they?
We don't have anything to do with it. This is not us.
So they're lying. So who have you talked to? The Pentagon? Did you talk to the Pentagon or who?
Well, we've had people calling everyone. We've had people calling Congress. We've had people calling Pentagon. We've had people calling the Navy. We've had people contacting the Missile Defense Agency from the Pentagon. We've done Freedom of Information Act requests. We're told that we're like number 3,000 on the list for any information to do with the missile defense or Navy or anything to do with Jeju Island. So, we're just being stonewalled. all the way around.
Isn't it?
You know how
so
it works.
Oh, it's so frustrating. So frustrating.
So we've been raising money. We've sent, we now have our second board member in the last 2 months. We just keep sending one board member after the other there to the island for a couple
so
of weeks.
So, Bruce,
at a time.
If people want to help, do you have a website? And if they want to give some money and support, if they want to join your organization, where do they go, Bruce?
We've got everything that I've been talking about on our website called spaceforpeace.org, spaceforpeace.org.
Okay.
That's the Global Network's website, and we've got on there information about missile defense, about Jeju Island, contact information, all the stuff.
Well, describe these Aegis ships that are being built in Bath, Maine, where you live. And I used to think Susan Collins had a heart, but how can she possibly go? Where is her head to announce they're going to build these ships to the tune of $3 billion? Is she just a puppet too, huh?
Well, of course she is. Of course she is. And
once I went up to Maine in the 80s, Bruce, and I'd just written my book Missile Envy, so I was full of information. And you had a senator there called, what was his name, Cohen?
Yep, Cohen. He became Secretary of Defense under Clinton.
What was his first name?
I'm blanking too.
And there was a woman who was going to run for Congress, and she brought me up there. And I'd just written Missile Envy, and I knew what he was up to, and I called him a corporate prostitute. In the media, well, did the heavens descend upon my head? And I'm afraid I destroyed the really nice woman who was running for Congress, her campaign, and they just absolutely belittled me in every way possible. But he was a corporate prostitute, and so is Susan Collins. And so it seems, are they all, huh?
His name was William Cohen.
William Cohen, Bill Cohen, that's right.
Let's be honest. It takes a lot of money to run for the United States Senate, and you're not going to get elected anymore. There are a few exceptions. Oh, my God, Bernie Sanders
in Vermont. Isn't he magnificent?
What a wonderful senator he's been.
Yes.
The people there are very lucky to have him.
Yes.
But in most cases, 90% of the cases, it takes massive amount of money. And where do you get that money other than Wall Street, from the military-industrial complex, et cetera? It's a millionaire's club now.
Yes, it is a millionaire's club. Describe to the people then who are listening, Bruce Gagnon, what an Aegis destroyer is. What does it do? And describe missile defense and how it actually works.
Well, let me first tell a story to kind of illustrate it. Every year, the Space Command holds a war game set in the year 2016. It's called the Red Team versus the Blue Team. And in this war game, in 2016, the U.S. launches a first strike attack on China. China has about 20 nuclear warheads today that are capable of hitting the west coast of the United States. And so the objective of this war game is to try to take out in the first strike China's 20 nuclear missiles.
With American nuclear weapons.
With America, various, not all nuclear weapons. They're now creating what they're calling prompt global strike weapons. And in fact, in the computer war game, the first weapon that is used is the successor to the space shuttle. You know, the space shuttle has now been retired, and they're now testing the military space plane. And so in this computer war game, the space plane comes down from space, drops an attack on China, hitting its nuclear weapons, and then goes back up into space. And then some of China's nuclear weapons in this computer war game are not hit, though. And so they fire them.
Wait a minute. Let's back up a bit. What do they hit with their first strike? What weapons do they use from the space plane? Are they just conventional weapons?
Well, yeah, they could be bunker busters. They could, they could be all kinds of different conventional weapons.
All right.
They also could be nuclear weapons as well.
All right. So
But at this point, China then fires its few remaining nuclear retaliatory strikes.
Yeah.
And so the sword, the United States has now thrust the sword of first strike at China.
Mm.
China then fires its remaining nuclear retaliatory capability. And so the U.S. then brings its shield. Its shield. And the shield is so-called missile defense. Missile defense is only useful, is only used as part of, as a key element in first strike strategy. And so missile defense interceptors, whether they're on the ground, whether they're on ships, whether they're on airplanes, someday maybe in space, they're developing a whole series of different kind of missile defense interceptors. But now, today, deployed on the ground and on ships are these missile defense systems that are being put into Taiwan. They're being put into South Korea. They're being put into Japan. And on ships, on these Aegis destroyers, just off the coast of China.
So let's continue with the scenario. America, with its sword, has knocked out some of the 20 Chinese nuclear weapons before they were launched. So then China launches the rest, and then the Aegis ships shoot up their missiles, which intercept and destroy the remaining Chinese missiles as they are in flight heading towards America. Is that right?
That's right, in addition to the ground-based launchers that are also deployed today in Taiwan, in South Korea, and in Japan.
All against 20 Chinese
less than
missiles?
20, less than 20, because some number of them are taken out in the first strike, right?
So how much is America spending on all these missile bases in Japan and Jeju Island, all the rest? How much?
I don't have that figure.
Billions,
but
and billions,
huge,
and billions.
Huge. It's $3 billion for one destroyer now. So, I mean, you know, the bases, the weapon systems on board, it's just unbelievable.
Who can bust this myth, though, to the American people, Bruce? Why don't you run for Congress or for the Senate? No, I'm serious.
Well, you know, I'm working every angle I can.
Yeah, but we need people who are intelligent like you, who'll stand up and speak the truth no matter what, to get in there and broadcast it from the rooftops. We need that. You're a grassroots man. I know that. And you're doing very good work, Bruce. But we need you to be in high echelon so that you get the attention of the policymakers and, more importantly, the American people at large.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your encouragement.
My endorsement.
I appreciate it. but anyway,
you'd be terrific,
let's
Bruce.
Let's just finish with this last.
All right.
Last bit here.
Okay.
China, seeing this whole situation, okay, seeing these expanding U.S. bases in the region, all right, China seeing these U.S. deployments now into South Korea, Taiwan, all right, Japan, China is saying, oh, my God, you know.
Yeah.
We're being encircled. They look at Afghanistan on their inland border. Look at a map, China's inland border. We're circling them there.
Yes, all the stans, in fact.
And so, you know, China's saying we've got to increase our military capability. Well, last night I'm watching a video from Guam, okay? The Chamber of Commerce on Guam is saying, hey, look, China is expanding their military. We have to support the United States Pentagon as they're requesting now expansion of the base on Guam. Because look at China. They're becoming more aggressive. They're developing more military capability here. And so people are saying it like it's, you know, it's just happening all by itself in a vacuum, you know, without really looking at the reason that China is obviously feeling that it's got to do something, because if the U.S. can choke off its importation of oil, because they import 80% of their oil on ships, well, then China's screwed. So
yeah, but how much really is China increasing its military, Bruce Gagnon? That's what I'd like to know. Do you have the figures?
I don't have the figures.
No.
They don't make them all public.
I don't think it's big at the moment.
There are estimates that they've been doing it. China might be up to about $75 billion a year.
Whereas America's at a trillion a year.
America's at a trillion a year. When you add in the Pentagon
Everything.
Budget and add in the NSA and the NRO.
And the black budgets, yes.
And Department of Energy's nuclear weapons, yeah, NASA, you add it all up, it comes to $1 trillion a year. Absolutely, that's true.
All right, now, so let's move on. I want to talk about drones.
Okay.
Off you go. I'm giving you a platform to talk about drones.
Well, thank you. The global network has been trying to get people who are increasingly interested in the drone issue being used today to kill a lot of civilians in Pakistan, being used to kill a lot of people and civilians in Afghanistan. They're being used in Libya today. They're being used in Somalia. They're being used in Iraq. They're being used in Yemen. And Israel's using them in Gaza with the help of the United States.
Oh, really?
But, you know, drones don't just fly by themselves, you know, because they're pilotless planes. They're unmanned aerial vehicles. And they're being hooked up through military satellites. So space technology is what is flying these things. Guys are sitting back home, men
or
and women.
Girls.
Yeah, sitting back home at bases in Creech Air Force Base, for example, out in Nevada, looking at a computer terminal with a joystick.
Pressing a button, killing people, killing wedding parties, killing families,
That's
killing
right.
civilians.
We're calling them the Chair Force.
The Chair
so
Force.
This year we are making drones the key theme of our annual Keep Space for Peace Week. And we've just published our poster, which is on our website, spaceforpeace.org. The poster reads, "Even in the heavens, war is hell." And there's some copy that follows that. It's a beautiful poster. It was designed by an artist that works at The Nation magazine. And in fact, they were very kind to us at The Nation. They gave us half off to buy a full-page ad. We're placing this poster in the end of August edition of The Nation magazine at half price. They gave us a great deal because of the artist who designed it works there. So we're really our Keep Space for Peace Week is October 1st through 8th.
And what can people do to get involved in that, Bruce?
Well, we ask people to organize local events all over the world during that week, and then we publicize this growing list repeatedly in the weeks before the event. So by the time it happens, we hope to have a massive amount of demonstrations all over the world, making the connection between drones and space technology, and then also the cost of these wars, the cost of wars to civilian casualties, the financial cost of these wars, and, you know, and then to make the statement to bring our war dollars home. This poster can be seen on our website at spaceforpeace.org. There's a flyer on there that people can use to let us know if you're going to organize a local action. We'll get you on the list. We'll be in touch. And people can buy these posters from us as well to help us support this campaign.
Well, I'd like everyone who's really interested in this to go and do that. We've got to get off our bottoms and away from our Facebook pages and actually get out there with our bodies. But the other interesting thing about drones, Bruce, that I read is that these people who normally, when a pilot drops cluster bombs or whatever, that pilot goes back to the aircraft carrier or to his base or her base, but never sees the damage. However, the people who are working the consoles in Nevada, launching the missiles from the drones, they actually see the body parts. They see children being blown to bits, brains and blood all over the walls. And these people now are having psychological responses to this dreadful wickedness, and they're needing counseling. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that's
Isn't
really
that
true.
Interesting. So the humanness, you can dehumanize pilots and the like, but you can't dehumanize the people watching the trauma. And that's what happened after Vietnam. The Pentagon decided that if it had its wars, it wasn't going to allow the media in to photograph, like the child running down the street, that little girl naked in flames from being burnt by, Napalm, yeah. And so now they censor the media, and the media get embedded with the Pentagon and the troops rather than being free agents. And
that's right.
And so the and drone thing bypasses that because they're actually the people doing it are actually seeing the destruction.
Yeah. I'm also a member of Veterans for Peace. I'm a very active member of the Maine chapter.
Yeah.
And I organized a walk through Maine last November. It started on election night, actually, and we walked through the state, and it was all about the cost of war. And one of the things we talked about was the incredible epidemic of suicides amongst veterans.
Oh, yes.
Today, there's more veterans killing themselves today than ever before.
And killing their families and their wives and getting into addiction and being homeless. I think, 75% of them have post-traumatic stress syndrome or more?
Yeah, all the talk about support our troops.
Support our troops, yeah.
It's all talk because, in fact, if people really wanted to support them, they'd bring them home and end this incredible
trauma. And the killing. I mean, America really is just a nation about killing because much of its wealth goes into murder. And I say that advisedly as a physician because the Pentagon is about murder, legitimized murder. And then, of course, we glorify war. And we glorify the people go to war. They come back terribly traumatized or dead or with no limbs or with their brain shot out. I mean, the thing is just so obscene, isn't it, Bruce?
In fact, a lot of the suicides now they're finding are soldiers that haven't even been there yet but are traumatized about even going because they're seeing their friends come back totally ruined, either physically and or mentally.
Oh, Bruce.
And so many of these suicides now are happening with men and women that are just afraid to even go.
Oh, Bruce, it just
so
makes me feel
really
like
unbelievable.
Weeping. I want to write a book about this, so I need to communicate with you about the veterans. What were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say that, coming back to your theme of just a few moments ago where you're saying people really need to get engaged.
Yes.
And I really see that we've become slaves. We've become slaves to the credit card. We've become slaves to television. We've become slaves to the Internet where we don't communicate with human beings anymore as organizers or activists.
Mm.
We've become slaves to the Democratic Party where we're afraid to criticize them. I had an email 2 days ago from a woman that I knew 25 years ago in Florida when I was there with the Florida Coalition for Peace and Justice, and she objected to an email I had sent around where I criticized Obama, and she said, you can't criticize Obama, and then she went on to say, I'm not really doing activist things anymore, and this is a real problem across the country that since Obama became president, a lot of quote-unquote liberal Democrats have backed out of being active in the peace movement and in other movements.
Why?
Because they think that he's going to take care of everything. And because they think that you can't criticize the Democratic Party. And this is a classic fundamental strategic mistake. We have to be out there holding every politician from any party accountable. And so I've kind of been saying over and over again, we all need to rattle our chains because we've literally got ourselves wrapped in chains.
We have. I'm going to interrupt you here, Bruce, because I want you briefly. We haven't got much time left. You've got to talk about this new plutonium-238 space probe. I want people to know about that, please.
Okay. Well, first let me say that as we're speaking, I know this is taped, so it's going to be delayed some days, but as we're speaking, tomorrow NASA is supposed to launch a space probe called Juno to go to Jupiter, and it's going to be carrying solar panels, three huge solar panels. Now, that when they launched Galileo in 89, Ulysses in 90, and then Cassini in 97, they said that they had to use nuclear reactors on board because solar would not work out in deep space.
Mm-hmm.
They called us liars when we said it would work.
Mm-hmm.
They said we didn't know what we're talking about.
Mm.
You were very involved with us in the Cassini campaign in 97. And so here they are now admitting that solar will work in deep space. But at the same time, next November or December, somewhere in that period of time, they're to launch a another Mars rover by the name of Curiosity that is going to carry on board 10.6 pounds of plutonium.
238.
238, the most deadliest substance ever created by humankind. And in the event of an accident upon launch and a release of plutonium, in the environmental impact statement, NASA acknowledges, quote, launch area accidents would initially release material into the regional area defined to be within 62 miles of the launch pad. So in other words, that would be as far as Disney World, from the Space Center to Disney World to the west. North to Daytona Beach, Florida, and south to Vero Beach, Florida. They would then have to go into that area and remove all the people, remove all the buildings, remove all the vegetation, remove all the animals. Can you imagine the squirrels, the birds, the flies, the fish, the alligators? And then ultimately they would have to remove the top half inch of topsoil because everything would be radioactive for thousands and thousands of years. So it's total insanity. And NASA is still hooked up to the nuclear game. The nuclear industry views space as a new market. They want to move the nuclear power out to the moon and Mars and put it on rockets with nuclear reactors for engines. There's a whole series of things
they're
that they want
nuts.
To do.
Nuts. Nuclear nuts.
You know, if we haven't learned by now that they couldn't handle the Hurricane Katrina. They couldn't handle the disaster situation. Imagine them handling a disaster situation in Florida in a 60-mile radius of nuclear
fallout. Oh, but it would be more than 60 miles because that plutonium would be dispersed in aerosolized forms of particles less than 5 microns in diameter, which enter the troposphere and would be blown all over the place. And those particles are of respirable size. They'd get into people's lungs, and you just need a millionth of a gram or less to definitely give you lung cancer. What people need to know is plutonium-239, which is the fuel for nuclear weapons, a pound, if hypothetically, you can't do this, but if adequately dispersed, could give everyone on Earth lung cancer. 1 pound, right? I just read the other day that at Sellafield they've got 100 tons of plutonium stockpiled, not knowing what to do with it. There's a huge amount all around the world. No wonder the incidence of cancer is rising. Well, now plutonium-238, which is a daughter of 239, is 270 times more toxic than plutonium-239. And it's 238 which they want to use in these spacecraft because the decay heat provides enough electricity to power the circuits on board. That's why they want to use it. They are nuclear nuts, Bruce. I don't, you know, after Fukushima, and this is an ongoing absolute tragedy, I mean, I guess I'm feeling absolutely impotent at the moment, don't know where to turn, what to do. Watching America in its almost its death throes of agony, you know, agony of death throes with these tea parties who are funded by the Koch brothers. They think they're just grassroots tea parties, but it's all highly orchestrated at very
yep.
senior levels by
yep.
millions and billions of dollars. I don't know. And then you look at Murdoch, who is a fellow countryman of mine, and what he's been up to and orchestrating. Not only has he been hacking into phones of the royal family and the like, but he's been orchestrating wars across the globe for the last 20 years and putting in presidents and putting in prime ministers. I mean, kind of where do you turn? We need a leader like Gandhi or like Martin Luther King or like Bruce Gagnon.
Well, you know,
may I say...
Well, I'm just going to ignore that last.
No, statement. Well, I don't want you to ignore it.
Let me say this. I used to despair over this, and I know many people do. I know many people are suffering severe depression because of all this
yeah.
stuff. And an old Quaker friend of mine told me one day, some years ago, that I had to let go of results, that I had to focus on the task at hand,
mm-hmm.
and to leave the rest to history, in other words, and do what I could do,
mm.
and work as hard as I could work, and
mm.
then not burden myself with feeling like that I had to solve all the problems.
Yeah, I understand.
Because just as I've laid out tonight, our organization is working on a lot of problems here.
Mm.
And so that's really liberated me. It's liberated me to do work as, you know, I work 7 days a week. Let's put it this way.
Yeah, so do I.
You know, I do the best I can, and that's all I can say.
Mm.
But let me also end by saying this. History tells us that every now and then the people move.
Mm, that's
right?
True.
And believe it or not, slowly but surely, I think that we are getting the American people to come around on these things. In spite of the fact that everything you said about the Koch brothers is absolutely true. They're pumping huge amounts of money into the Tea Party and everything else. But the fact of the matter is, Helen, that 70% of the American people say, get out of Afghanistan. Stop spending that money. And that's in spite of the fact that they have a damn near complete corporate control of the media today.
Mm.
So somehow our message is getting through to 70% of the American people that the Afghanistan war is a disaster, immoral, and is destroying our country's economy. So the people are indeed, we are getting through to them. The last step we have to go now is to move them into action, to move them, to get them to believe in their self.
Yes, right? Believe in themselves.
To stop this internalized oppression. People have internalized this oppression. And when they can reject that and become full human beings again and move into action, someday it's going to happen. So, you know, we're reaching a conjunction of interests here, and we're reaching that, what do you call it, the trim tab theory, you know.
Trim tab factor. The trim tab factor is when you've got a great big boat and you want to change course the normal rudder, which is huge, would take ages to turn the boat around, but there's a little tiny rudder within the huge rudder called the trim tab factor. And if you turn that little tiny rudder, the whole boat turns.
Yeah, and so I think we're right on the edge of turning the boat. And once that momentum gets going, it's what? Impossible to stop. So, you know, I think that we just have to believe in ourselves.
All right, Bruce, on that tremendously optimistic note, and I want to see you in Congress as a member for Maine. Okay, thank you very much, Bruce, for appearing today.
All right, you take
today.
Care. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
My guest today on If You Love This Planet was Bruce Gagnon, coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. You can go to his webpage called spaceforpeace.org, which will be absolutely chock-a-block full of information which will empower and mobilize and impassion you. Thanks for listening today. There's so much to talk about now, isn't there? So much to talk about. Programs like this are very important, you know, because there are very few programs where we can actually go for it and speak the truth in an uninhibited fashion. And that's why I'd be very grateful if you went to our webpage called ifyoulovethisplanet.org and pressed on the Donate Now button to help us keep going at this really imperatively important time in the history of the planet. Thanks for listening today, and we'll be back with you with another fascinating program next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to If You Love This Planet with Dr. Helen Caldicott. This program is broadcast on community radio across the United States, including our host station, KPFT Pacifica, Houston, Texas. This program is produced and engineered by Jazz Williams, co-produced by Scott Powell, and our publicity and outreach are coordinated by Amanda Bellerby. To listen to previous shows or to make a donation, go to our website, ifyoulovethisplanet.org.